from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
The state of New York legalizes the killing of children. The nation celebrates a great man. And what's become of Syria? That's all coming up on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. On Tuesday night, which happened to be the 46th anniversary of the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signed into law the Reproductive Health Act. It's the most extreme abortion law in America. It guarantees abortion throughout all 9 months of pregnancy, prohibits born-alive protections for babies who survive botched abortions, and eliminates from the New York Criminal Code any and all health and safety regulations related to abortion. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to discuss this horrific law is New York State Senator Robert Ort, who represents two counties in the northwest corner of the state.
Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me, Tony.
Senator, I have to assume that this was heartbreaking to you and your colleagues who understand the importance of the preservation and the sanctity of human life. This is such a blot on New York.
Well, it was a very sad day, and it was made all the more sad for me by the contrast. You know, you were referring to the reaction in the gallery. When it was passed, the Senate Democrats, who control the gallery, as they are the majority party, you know, they made sure that the gallery was packed with pro-abortion, you know, supporters of this bill, and there were only a few. There were plenty of pro-life supporters at the Capitol, but there were only a handful that were allowed into the gallery. And when it passed, of course, it was passed to all kinds of applause and cheering. You know, you would have thought you were at a sporting event or something really positive had happened. And many of us, in fact, all of us on the Republican side of the chamber, I think viewed it as really a shameful and sad day in New York State. History in New York State government history, where we did all the things you just said. We really almost basically are moving towards infanticide. We removed protections for women. So now, you don't even have to be a licensed physician to perform an abortion. We allow abortion through the entire term, for almost any reason. And I think importantly as well, under previous law, if I assaulted or harmed a woman who was pregnant and that resulted in the death of her unborn child, I could be prosecuted for that, you know, as a homicide or as manslaughter, you know, recognizing the life of the unborn child that was lost. By moving it out of the criminal code, that will not happen now. And so what you effectively have in this law is you have the removal, legally speaking, as well as otherwise, of any recognition of the life and the value placed on that life of the unborn child. And that is what the Democratic majority and the governor have done here in New York.
You know, Senator, what I find... Well, there's so many things I find troubling about this, but of course, Cuomo trying to position himself as on the national political stage, pushing back against Trump, and of course, all of this is about the pro-life gains made nationally, the Supreme Court. This all began with, well, what if there are five justices that would overturn Roe v. Wade, and so we have to take action to protect it. They're not protecting the status quo, as you just clearly pointed out. This is going way beyond the status quo to moving New York in a column all by itself. And believe me, brother, I would not want to have this on my resume as the governor of the state. I believe he is moving into dangerous ground with this type of legislation.
Absolutely. I think there's even women or folks in New York who may consider themselves pro-choice, and I've heard from them, and they've told me this is too far even for them. But as you probably are aware, you know, right now in New York, in New York City particularly, the progressives, the radical left, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you know, she's from New York. She's one of ours, you know, down there in Washington, and a lot of other ones. They are, you know, this is where they are moving. I think this is really a preview nationally of where the Democratic Party and the radical wants to go.
But just I want to put this very quickly in perspective for our listeners. It's not like abortion was somehow being lost in New York. I mean,
correct.
New York has
correct.
Twice the abortion rate of the national average. New York alone has 200 abortion facilities. A majority of the 120,000 children killed by abortion in New York every year are minority children whose mothers live at or below the poverty line. In fact, I remember a statistic that if you're a minority child, more minority children are aborted than born in New York City.
You know, Tony, you're so right. And the Democrats do this all the time, certainly in New York. They create this sense that somehow there is this threat, you know, that somehow, like you said, that abortion rights or whatever it was being lost. And they continued, and one of the things that really upset me on the floor was several members of the majority kept saying, we have to do this to protect against the radical conservative Supreme Court, you know, the President Trump Supreme Court, when in fact this bill has been around for over 10 years.
Yeah.
So
they're
notion
using that
they
as
are
an excuse.
Against anything. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Senator, we got to leave it there. Out of time. I want to thank you not only for joining us today, but I want to thank you for standing as light in what right now is a very dark place.
Well, thank you very much, Tony, and thank you for what you do, and thank you for having me.
You can find out more about Robert Ort when you visit tonyperkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider donating to the work of Family Research Council by simply clicking on the Donate button. Your financial help is critical this time of year, and you can make the difference. That website, once more, is tonyperkins.com.
Tony Perkins here, president of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join Luana and me, General Jerry Boykin, Michelle Bachman, on FRC's first ever D.C. Christian Heritage Tour and Summit in Washington, D.C. on March the 28th through the 31st, 2019. Washington is the epicenter of American politics and the free world. It's also a place that will inspire your faith and your patriotism. With the 5-star Trump International Hotel as home base, your experience will include a tour and dinner at the Museum of the Bible, a private tour of the Capitol, dinner on Capitol Hill, renowned monuments, briefings from national leaders, and, pending approval, a White House briefing. Journey with us as we explore God's providence in America's past, His hand in the present, and His heart for America's future. For more information, visit frc.org/DC Heritage. Again, that's frc.org/DC Heritage for more information about the Christian Heritage Tour and Summit.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Monday of this week, the nation celebrated the civil rights legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. Had he not been gunned down in Memphis in 1968, Dr. King would have celebrated his 90th birthday on the 15th of January. Here to discuss Dr. King's legacy is Dean Nelson, Senior Fellow of African American Affairs for the Family Research Council.
Dean, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony, for doing this important program. It's great to be with you.
Well, thanks, Dean. It does seem as though the fact that Dr. King was a pastor and that he was animated and motivated by biblical concepts and principles has been lost by the masses as he has been filtered through the left-wing media.
Without a doubt. I mean, as I'm thinking about the statue that's even there in Washington, D.C., it has engraving. It doesn't even mention the fact that he was a minister of the gospel, which is the thing that he wanted to be remembered for. And so I'm happy to say, though, that there is a growing number of black ministers around the country who want to re-emphasize the real meaning behind what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. lived for and ultimately what he died for. And that was his commitment to God and to use biblical principle in our culture to restore our culture.
Now, I know every human being is fallible, and so no one is perfect. But when I listen to his sermons, I read his books, I mean, the man clearly was anointed to communicate. And he used those biblical references. He used those biblical illustrations. And I'm left to think, Dean, that without religion, without the church, there would not have been a civil rights movement, not one that would have succeeded.
There's no question about it. I mean, for most Americans, we're familiar with Dr. King's famous I Have a Dream speech. And in it, you know, he quotes particularly from Amos chapter 5, those eloquent words of let justice roll down like waters and righteousness as a mighty stream. Justice was obviously a very important theme for him and throughout the civil rights movement. And he would use that time and time again, not to really criticize America, but really to call America to live up to its foundational creed and understanding that those things were laid even in our Constitution and in our early founding documents. That was his call, was to use those biblical principles that our American nation was founded upon and calling America simply to live up to those standards.
And that appeal to scripture, transcendent truth. I mean, that's one of the reasons you can appeal to it, because it is truth. But that's been present in two of the most significant social changes in America. Whether you talk about, we talk about the civil rights movement, but also back to abolition, the ending of slavery. I know you have written about Frederick Douglass, and you've studied him. You've spoken. You're part of the Frederick Douglass Foundation. Religion is key to social change.
Without a doubt. And if you, just as you're saying, if you were to go back, 100 years before, Dr. King, you would listen to the words of the great abolitionist Frederick Douglass, who would also quote the Bible. He once said, my greatest, political idea, he says, in effect, you can find it in the Bible. It is that righteousness exalts a nation. Sin is a reproach to any people. He said, that's the whole of my politics, the positive and the negative. And he was also a licensed minister of the gospel. But they would use that. They would call America, even like the ideas that would be found, in our modern Christian, thought of, Imago Dei, taking the idea that all of us are created in the image and likeness of God. And those principles were transformative and allowed these men to be effective in their generation to make a difference for the glory of God within the culture.
So, Dean Nelson, when we look at the challenges that we face today in America, we could talk about drugs, the opioid crisis. We could talk about the division that's in our nation. I mean, you pick something. The power for transformation, as we've seen historically, it is hard to come by short of the gospel and biblical truth. And as we see increasingly those that want to remove that from society, the hope for the transformation that we need is lost.
Without a doubt, both of these men not only used biblical principle, but also had deep experiences and encounters with God themselves. And I'm proud to say that today I was, and yesterday I've been with a number of ministers, some of them who lead civil rights organizations. And what I've heard consistently from these men is we can't have justice without also having a commitment to righteousness. You've quoted it before where Dr. King essentially said that the church is not the master nor the servant right. of the state, but rather it's called to be the conscience of the state. And if we don't recapture that prophetic zeal, we become an irrelevant social club without moral and spiritual authority. And that's what I'm hearing from ministers, black and white, today. There has to be something that happens on the inside in the heart that then makes a difference to change the outside.
One of my favorite quotes from Dr. King. Dean Nelson, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate what you're doing out there across America.
Tony, thank you for honoring Dr. King and all the work that you're doing at FRC.
You can find out more about Dean Nelson and his work at the Family Research Council when you visit tonyperkins.com. And a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council not only help us to continue making these programs available, but it enables you to take a stand for faith, family, and freedom. And we hope you'll take the time to donate when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'll be right back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths. Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference? Now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together and advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just a tap of the screen. Sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins, or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app.
Tony Perkins here, president of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join Luana and me, General Jerry Boykin, Michelle Bachman, on FRC's first ever D.C. Christian Heritage Tour and Summit in Washington, D.C. on March the 28th through the 31st, 2019. Washington is the epicenter of American politics and the free world. It's also a place that will inspire your faith and your patriotism. With the five-star Trump International Hotel as home base, your experience will include a tour and dinner at the Museum of the Bible, a private tour of the Capitol, dinner on Capitol Hill, renowned monuments, briefings from national leaders, and, pending approval, a White House briefing. Journey with us as we explore God's providence in America's past, His hand in the present, and His heart for America's future. For more information, visit frc.org/DC Heritage. Again, that's frc.org/DC Heritage for more information about the Christian Heritage Tour and Summit.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. In recent months, President Trump has taken a lot of flack for saying that the United States was going to pull out of the war-torn country of Syria. With Russia and Iran already working in the country, many are concerned about giving that region over to those bad actors. Middle East Bureau Chief for CBN News, Chris Mitchell, is on the ground in Syria and joins Tony with an overview of the situation there in light of the president's decision to withdraw U.S. troops.
Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you, and great to be with you just a couple of weeks ago in Egypt at the dedication of that church built by President el-Sisi to the Coptic Christians.
You know, I thought I did a lot of traveling, but you get around. You're all over the place, and you're in some challenging places. Right now, you're in Syria. You've been there on the ground for a day or two, and you've been meeting with leaders. Give us, first off, kind of what will be the impact, or what is the impact you're seeing of the announcement that the United States is pulling out of that northeastern region of Syria?
Well, Tony, right now I'm seeing three major impacts. The first one is a geopolitical impact, because when the announcement of the U.S. Forces pulling out of Syria, all the surrounding nations want a piece of this pie in northeast Syria. You have Turkey to the north, you have Iran to the east, and you also have the Syrians as well as the Russians in the western part of Syria. They all want to have fill the vacuum that they believe the U.S. may leave. That's one. The second thing I've been hearing, Tony, is that many of the Christians here are deeply concerned about the possibility of another genocide. They know, when they look back to last year in a Syrian town of Afrin, where Turkey came in and with a misleading operation called Operation Olive Branch, Afrin was taking over. Many Kurds and Christians literally fled for their lives, and they used mercenaries, jihadist mercenaries, to do that job. That's the other thing, Christians that are very concerned about a genocide. And the third thing, it has to do with part of an untold story here, Tony, is that there's been a representative form of government here in northeast Syria. It actually started several years ago, but you have Yazidis, you have Kurds, Christians, Arabs working together, not only in a military capacity, but also in a representative government where they have freedom of worship, where they have representative of all these various ethnic groups. And it's really a model, and I think it's sort of an untold story. Because of the U.S. pullout, that seems to be in peril right now.
Well, Chris, what you described there in terms of this representative form of government, you know, a democracy almost, where you've got this pluralistic government, that is, you know, with the exception of maybe Israel, that's pretty much an anomaly in that region of the world.
Very much so. In fact, that's what I was thinking of, too. I live in Israel, and that certainly is a vibrant democracy, the only one of its kind, but this is really a model. And what they're telling me is that they sort of see themselves as like the U.S. Revolution back in the 1700s. They see themselves trying to establish a free, democratic area where everybody can be represented. And right now, they're all the major powers around them, whether it's Turkey, Iran, the Syrians, and the Russians, they don't want that to be established, and they would like this actually to spread and certainly be preserved. They really feel, and I've been talking to a number of leaders, that they have really paid literally with blood to be able to establish this, not just to fight ISIS, but also to establish this kind of representative government.
Well, Chris, I think you and I have talked about this before, is that the Christian population, of course, we're talking there in that northeastern region of Syria, about 100,000 Christians, but the population previous to the meltdown in Syria and the rise of ISIS was much more vibrant and larger, and it was a stabilizing force. That's why a lot of people want to see the religious minorities move back into these historically Christian areas, or at least where the Christian church has a historical root, because it is a stabilizing force. But I think this takes it to a new level. As you pointed out, this could be a model for others in that region of the world, but could be a real anchor for stability if this government prospers.
And that's exactly right, and that would be wonderful to have that kind of anchor of stability here in such a volatile region. I sat down last night with a couple of Syria Christian leaders, and one of the ladies was telling us, you know, we are the salt and light in this region, and God forbid that we would be eradicated and remove that salt and light, that preservative aspect of what a Christian body can bring. And they're very concerned about the Turkey in particular. I think that what unifies probably all the people here, they really are very, very concerned about the desire of Erdogan in Turkey to come in not only to have this potential 20-mile buffer zone where most Christians live, all the way from Kobani to about the area we are right now. They're very concerned that's going to happen. You know, they have a short-term memory and a long-term memory about that. Short-term is what happened last year in Afrin, where many Christians were evicted from that area. And the long-term memory is that many of the people here, their great-grandparents had to flee the Armenian genocide in 1915. And that because of that collective memory they have, that's exactly what they're very concerned about.
So, Chris Mitchell, what preparations are they now taking, or what actions are they considering as the United States begins this withdrawal? The only thing in question apparently now is the timing of the withdrawal.
Right. Well, they're really hoping that it won't happen, that the United States will actually stay and protect them. But the people that I've been talking to say, well, if the United States does leave, we're going to fight. We're going to stand, and we're going to protect our freedom that we believe that we have been fighting for a number of years, and especially fighting ISIS. They believe that they have been the tip of the spear fighting against ISIS. They call it Daesh over here. And really protecting the United States, the West, from ISIS spreading even further. So they believe that they're going to fight. There is a concern, Tony, that there is negotiations going on with Russia and the Syrians for them to come into this region. And the reason is they're saying, what the Russians and Syrians say, listen, if you align with us, then we will protect you from Turkey. But what that would do, if the Russians and the Syrians come in, that's going to bring the influence of Iran in as well. So they see Turkey certainly as their number one enemy, but also Iran is a big enemy to them as well.
I've heard those conversations are going on. Chris Mitchell, we've got to leave it there. We're out of time, but we will be checking back with you as you gather more information there on the ground in Syria.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.